We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have on the program once again the guy that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And for a very long time now, he's been stopping by on a regular basis. First Wednesday of the month. And we have been doing the shows talking about cooking. He picks a topic and says, okay, let's talk about this. And sometimes we have talked about a particular dish and encourage people to tell us, well, what's your spin on that thing? How do you make that? We've talked about cooking, from different places in the world, different places in the country. Sometimes there's a seasonal connection. At a particular time of the year, we just think, well, let's talk about – in the summertime, we talk about fresh produce. In the fall, we talk about the fall harvest. And sometimes we do that sort of thing. So this time around, he thought, well, it's beginning a new year. And he'd be interested in hearing from people about what – new thing have you learned in the kitchen in the past year? Could be, maybe it's something that you've made for the first time. Maybe it's some technique that you had just hadn't never done it before. And you suddenly did it and thought, hey, that's pretty good. And that's now become part of your cooking repertoire. Or maybe it's a particular recipe, whatever it is. So this makes the topic pretty wide open. We could talk about all kinds of things. So we're interested certainly in stories, and as always, we're interested in recipes. So maybe, again, you have a good recipe you'd like to share with us. Give us a call, whatever way you want to do that. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that. The address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good to have you here once again.
Yes, thank you very much.
I want to mention, now this is something that we'll be talking about a lot. Probably people will get sick of us talking about it. But right here now, it's almost the beginning of the year. It's your first time here. That this year is the 30th anniversary year of this show.
How about that?
30 years. And I think that probably of the people that we enjoy seeing regularly, certainly you have been here more than anybody else, and are one of our most long-standing core regular guests. And I'm so pleased.
Well,
that
I'm
you're
happy.
Here.
I'm that happy to still be here.
So, and now something in particular got you thinking about wanting
I just came back from a trip visiting family in South Carolina, and I picked up a couple of recipes that and one of them is very simple. Well, and then I ate a lot, and I have to talk about that. I'm sorry.
Okay, and it was at some point here we want to have a little grits talk.
I'm afraid so. And my friends are out there laughing. They're laughing themselves to pieces right now because I said I wasn't going to do that, but I am going to. I even brought the rest of my grits.
Your favorite grits.
Yes.
It's something that I have had polenta.
Yes.
Although I think the style that I particularly like, it's the one that's. You make solid. It's kind of like a little loaf.
Yes.
A little thing. And then you grill that.
Yes.
And think, okay, that's good.
That's good. That's polenta.
That's polenta.
But that's like mama's mush.
Yeah.
Cornmeal mush. I'm telling you, I freaked out because I'd been making grits for some time and so always sort of tolerated them. But they were the instant grits. And I had never experienced the grits that take 30 minutes to cook. And I'm telling you, don't begrudge 1 minute of that 30 minutes. It makes a dish that is so good, I couldn't believe how good it was. And it has a texture, a nice mouthfeel, as the the pundits like to say, and it tastes good, and I have become an absolute devotee. And to show how contemporary we are,
yes,
my magazine from Southern Living came yesterday, and there's you can buy the grits exactly as I got them in South Carolina. I've been told that you can get grits here in town, stone ground grits, not anything from the fast grits people.
Mm-hmm, okay.
But if somebody knows that, I'd like to know where you get it, or else I've got the recipe here to get on the internet and get another couple of pounds.
We have some callers
already.
Let's talk with
Yay.
Them. First up, we have somebody on the toll free line. They're in Burr Ridge, on line 4. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to call about a technique that I learned about 2 years ago that really helps to hold down the dishes when it comes to making, like, cake or brownie mixes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, what I do is I'll take the box mix and I'll empty it into a 1 gallon plastic bag, a Ziploc bag.
Yeah.
And I'll just put all the ingredients in, being the mix, the eggs, the oil, the water.
Oh.
And then seal the bag and actually work it around with my hands until everything's mixed.
Are you old enough to know how to make oleo in that smashed bag that you used to get?
No, not quite. I am old, but
that really
worked with oleo.
That was during the Second World War years. You got oleo in a bag, and you had to mix the coloring in with it. And so my job, of course, as a kid, was to sit there and squeeze it. Sounds exactly like it, though. Mix it in a gallon.
Then I just cut the corner of the bag and I squeeze it into the pan. And
yeah.
I mean, you get every last.
You're absolutely right, and no mess.
Yeah, no cleanup.
Well, that is a good trick. That's very good. Mix it in a gallon bag. I've got a lot of those. That's great.
That's it for me.
All right. Well,
that's very good.
Thank you.
It's exactly what I wanted to know. Things like that. Great.
All right. Well, we'll go on to somebody else here in Mohammed, and that's line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
I talked to you a long time ago and told you that I got a Zoji Rushi thermal pot.
Oh, yes.
And you know what? The thing works great for polenta.
Uh-huh.
You just heat the corn in the water and put some butter in if you want and salt and then leave it for 4 or 5 hours. And I find it just as good as anything I stood around and stirred.
Well, yes. Now, that's polenta you're making.
Yes.
Yes, that's very good.
And I use the coarser stuff.
The coarse one, yes.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that very much.
I have another thing. I've been exploring South American and Mexican food.
Oh, good.
Using the internet to look up really great recipes.
Right.
And I tried something yesterday. It's called bica mantecada with cornflour. Because I had a bag of cornflour and didn't know what to do with it. I picked it up at the Indian food store, and other than coating fish with it,
uh-huh,
I don't know what to do with it. So this uses half. First, they have you make a cornbread dough, which is a yeast recipe.
Oh.
And it's on the internet. All the sites have this recipe. So I'm not even going to tell you the whole recipe, but it uses half corn flour and half wheat flour.
I see.
And you end up with a yellowish bread dough. Then you take 250 grams of that bread dough, and you go ahead and make a cake with it. And the cake was wonderful. You add your butter and sugar and 8 eggs. It's a really yellow. I don't know what you would call it. It's not cornbread. It's not sponge cake. It's someplace in between.
Well, it might be very much like the spoon bread, since it's got so many eggs in it.
It's not soft.
Oh, it's not soft? Oh.
No, it's a nice, heavy cake. And you then you put, not icing, but cinnamon and sugar on top of it.
Oh, my.
And it is just wonderful. But it's called bica, B-I-C-A.
Oh, B-I-C. Yes.
Mantecada. M-A-N-T-E-C-A-D-A.
Bica mantecada. That's good.
This recipe just turned out great. My husband likes it, too. Oh, and it has lemon zest for flavoring.
Oh, my.
In the cake. And then you have this 3/4 of a batch of cornbread dough. and it's not cornbread like we think of
right.
it. It's yeast, and you use it for pizza crust is what I did.
Oh, gosh.
Pizza crust was great.
Yeah?
I did save a quarter of it and tried to raise it as bread, but it was the next day, and it didn't raise very well.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I like using it as the pizza dough, you know, better.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I'm glad you're experimenting with what you're discovering, too.
Well, I've been having a lot of fun, and your show is great. Thank
well,
you.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much. I think that they exactly what the man here, that's the exact
that's
kind
exactly
of story
what I wanted.
That he's after.
I know, because so many things are available to us now, and there are so many possibilities of change. I know we've even sort of done this once before, but I like the idea of because I'm always discovering new things, and I can't be the only one that's discovering new things, since I happen to know everything anyway, of course. To discover something new is very exciting.
All right. The man here is the guy we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he stops by on the first Wednesday of the month, the 10 o'clock show. We talk about food and cooking, and it's always something a little bit different. And he said this time around, as we are going into a new year, he was just curious. He'd said, well, he'd like to hear some stories from people who about something in the kitchen that in the last year they have discovered that was really new, something that maybe it could be a recipe they came across, they had never done it before, and they made it and it really turned out. Or maybe it could be one of those things where I think maybe we all have this list of things that we always say, I want to make this thing. But somehow we never quite get around to doing it, and then the day comes and you do and you think, well, now why did I wait so long
exactly.
to do this?
That too.
It could be maybe it's something, maybe a particular kind of pan or something, some kitchen device that you brought into the kitchen and that has just been really fabulous for you. Any and all that kind of thing. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And, of course, recipes are welcome. Well, you want to talk some more about
that? In fact, encouraged.
Grits? Oh, well, yes. In fact, demanded. No.
No, I want to get this other recipe off.
Yeah.
We were in Charleston, and my niece, who lives there, was married to a guy from Holland, and so he has, and his mother and father are here in the country. They live in Phoenix, Arizona, but she cooks a lot of Indonesian food, being Dutch, but she had this recipe for boterkoek. And I had never run into it, and so my niece had tried the recipe for the first time. The mother was the one who always cooked it. Well, she's not there now, and so she cooked it, and I was really impressed with it, so I begged the recipe. It's so simple. It's so very much like a Scotch shortbread, but it really isn't. It's just different, and I think it's the technique that you use. It's very, very simple. 2 cups of flour and 2 sticks of butter, and 1 cup of sugar, and 1 egg, and then almond extract. And the butter and the sugar are mixed together, just like making a sugar cookie. Then you add the egg and then the flour. And we did this with a hand mixer, and boy, it's a very, very, very stiff dough. That you wonder what on earth is going to happen. And then you use a 9x9 pan or an 8x8, and you butter it, but then put sugar in it instead of flour. That's kind of a nice little treat with the sugar. And so you mix the egg yolk. Oh, and then That's the stuff that goes into the cake. Was 2 cups of flour, 2 sticks of butter, 1 cup of sugar, and 1 egg, and then mix all those together, and then put that in the. But the way you put it in the pan is you grab hunks of the dough out of the bowl and mash it down into the pan. So you're sort of doing Play-Doh. It's back to Play-Doh days, and even it out as best you can, and then mix a little bit of egg yolk with water, and cover the top of that dough with egg yolk, and then you can sprinkle a little sugar on top if you want. Then you add sliced cherries, maraschino cherries, or you could put an almond on the top of it. That's pretty tasty. I would do a slivered almond, and then it's baked for about 30 minutes. That depends, but so you look at it until it's done. It doesn't turn dark brown or even brown, but it sits, and about 30 minutes at 350 in the oven. And what you do after you have packed it into the dish is that you cut it with a knife into square inch chunks. You can cut it all the way down to the pan before you bake it, and then it comes out very easy. It was a surprise. I mean, didn't we make it again after I got there? That's how come I got the recipe, and we had that all during the Christmas holiday. And it's just a little bite. It's just delicious.
That's a lot of butter.
That's a lot of butter, but it's 2 cups of flour, 2 sticks of butter. So I say it's very much like shortbread, but it's thicker than shortbread. It's almost 3/4 inch thick, but it acts like shortbread. But oh my, it tastes good. Just a little bite. A wee thick wafer.
All right then. Let us talk with someone else here who is listening, and this is somebody in Champaign, and line number one. Hello.
Welcome to Verizon.
I guess not. Maybe we'll try again. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. You wanted to go on and talk?
Oh, yeah.
Well, grits,
of course. My friends, as I say, are laughing at me because I'm going to talk about grits, because I fell in love with grits in South Carolina. Mm. Having all the grits that I'd ever cooked before were just they were instant grits. And I confronted the stone ground grits, and I thought, oh, but you don't make that because it takes so long to make. Yes, that's what I thought. And yes, it does. But I'm telling you, it's worth every minute of your stirring and mixing time, which the recipe is very simple. I just happen to have brought my refuse grits bag with me. And the instructions on the back for Charleston creamy grits. I don't believe I did those. I think I did Southern style grits. I then altered the recipe, and then I found 3 or 4 other recipes. Let's see, for 2 servings, I made it for sister and me, 2/3 cup of grits and 2 cups of water, for which I put in milk instead of water, and left the salt out. And you bring that to a boil, and then you put the lid, you don't put the lid on it. You just let bring the boil way down then after it starts boiling, and it starts to thicken and bubble and make those volcano bubbles, you know. Yeah. And it takes about 30 minutes. It says 28 minutes here, and I followed it right to the bit, 28 minutes. And then add some butter. And all of that is variable. And since then, I found people who insist that you have to use chicken broth instead of other stuff. But I like the milk and the cream with the grits. It made a real, real good taste. And I liked it very much. And I thought, why haven't I had stone ground grits before? I've always just avoided, well, I've never found them. Now, I've been told by some of my friends here in town, you can buy them here in town, but I don't know. I've never seen them. I don't know about it. But as avant-garde as we are in this program, mm-hmm. my Southern Living magazine came. This is a gift from my sister. My Southern magazine came yesterday, and lo and behold, you can buy grits over the internet exactly as you can in the middle of Charleston. So I have the place you can get. Well, I'll just tell you. See, how do you get a hold of them? It's let's see, For the Southern Soul, forthesoutheronsoul.com. And that's a Charleston-based food for the Southern soul, and it's $5.59 for a 2-pound cloth bag, and you can get yellow or white. So that pleased me because that's the price in the grocery stores in Charleston. And if you're down around where the tourists go, you pay $10 for that same amount, which I did because I wanted some. And then it got to be so heavy I couldn't bring it back in my bag, so it's being mailed to me, which increases the cost. I'm going to let Food for the Southern Soul pay for the shipping.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so surprised at how good they were, and my sister desired them very much. So I was cooking them every day while I was there in Charleston.
And it looks like they have a lot of these folks. They have a lot of things like they have barbecue sauce, they have rice and grits, and apple butter, and salad dressing, and other sorts of things of that nature. So that there's a number of our products that people can check out if they're of a. Of a southern mindset.
Of a southern mind. Well, I've changed because I'm telling you, I'm sold on them. I can hardly wait to get home and make some.
Right. Now with the internet, I think you probably get anything from any place just about. In terms of, you know, exotic, what formerly would have been exotic ingredients, things to cook with.
Exactly. Yeah. And it surprised me because I did have a couple of leads on places to buy them. I have so that I can call up and, yes, they would send them to me. But I was stunned. Not only that, but it's exactly the same brand as I got.
A nice cloth bag.
Which is a local brand, by the way, a local brand in Charleston.
All right. Let's go to Urbana. Talk with somebody else. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I learned a lot from, I think it was on the Afternoon magazine. They interviewed someone who had written a book called Greening Your Kitchen. And they had a lot of tips on making your kitchen and your cooking style more environmentally friendly.
Yes.
Using, which I think is very, very timely, using less plastic. One thing I've discovered is that I can cover almost any bowl with almost any salad plate, so I don't have to use plastic.
Okay.
Yeah, and well, there are a lot of other ways of reusing plastic, so long as you don't contaminate your food, of course, but lot of ways to do that. They reminded me, I guess I kind of knew but wasn't practicing, that you can turn off the heat on both above the stove cooking, I mean top of the stove cooking, and let things finish cooking for a few minutes because they're hot.
Yes.
And same with the oven, and that you don't always have to preheat the oven. And for so often, the recipe starts out with preheat the oven.
Oh, yes.
And it
yes.
takes a long time
yes, it
to
does.
Mix up the dish, so your oven is ready way before.
Yes, you're right. Now, there are a couple that say put it in a cold oven. I mean, you'll find a recipe now and then where I cook a bread in a cold oven and put it in. So those first few minutes, it is sort of rising. It's a very quick bread. No, it's not a quick bread. It's a very easy and efficient made bread. It's yeast and everything. But it starts with a cold oven. But I know there are some cold ovens. And then, you know, when you're cooking meat, you always take it out and, oh, now you have to let it sit for 15 minutes. Uh-huh. Well, you're absolutely right. Let it sit in the oven and cool down. Get back together.
And also, that way, oftentimes, you don't have to wait so long for the food to cool before you can eat it. So.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's good thinking.
Yeah, I found it.
Well, thank you. That probably makes you happier to be in the kitchen.
Yes, it does. And after having heard that on the radio, then I kind of, you know, started thinking and took the process a little further and discovered other ways. So, anyway,
well, it's hooray, hooray for radio.
Yes, indeed.
It gets you going.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. We are at the midpoint here. It's the first Wednesday of the month. For a long time on the first Wednesday at 10 o'clock, we've been talking about food and cooking with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he picked some topic. We've talked about a lot of different things. We've exchanged stories and cooking tips and recipes, talked about cooking different dishes using different kinds of key ingredients. And this time around, he said, well, you know, it's the beginning of a new year here. And he was kind of curious to hear from people about something new that they have learned in the kitchen over the last year. Maybe it's some way of cooking that they hadn't done before, some new technique. Maybe it was a dish that you just discovered, had never made before, but made it for the first time within the last year and thought that it was just terrific. Something new that you maybe have brought into your kitchen, and any and all of that. It's kind of wide open. Questions are certainly welcome. Or, you know, one thing that we've done on the show over time is encourage people to call in if they were having a problem. And we have heard occasionally from people who have said, you know, I've been trying to make this thing, and I've tried and tried, and it just doesn't work. Do you have an idea, or does someone have an idea about what I might be doing wrong here and how I might change things? So this also could be a year in which you resolve to get something that you keep trying to do and it just doesn't work.
Get her done.
Yeah, do, you know, figure out what the problem is, and maybe we can help out with that. Any and all of that, you certainly can give us a call. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I think for myself, I have a growing appreciation here for cast iron.
Oh yes,
and I, you know, for a long time, I have a nifty little pan. I've talked about this, I'm sure, that my mom gave me a long time ago, that I used to make cornbread, and it's a pan where that's divided into wedge shaped sections.
Oh yes.
It is fabulous. And I think of my mom, bless her soul, every time that I make cornbread because it's horribly disreputably greasy because I heat the oil in the pan. So you get this hot, oily pan, and then you pour your dough into the sections, and what you get is a wonderful little wedge-shaped muffin kind of a deal.
With crust on all sides. Three edges.
Ooh, it's a magical thing. So this past year, I needed to get a new wok. And I had been using one. I know people say, oh, this is not good. But I had been using one that was nonstick, which I kind of liked because it enabled me to cook with less oil. So, but, you know, eventually nonstick stuff, it wears out. So I decided, okay, I really need to have a new wok. And I started going on the internet and kind of reading about what people thought. And I'm reading about people talking about cast iron woks. And I'm thinking, well, that's pretty interesting. Maybe I will try that. So the fine folks at Lodge, who make cookware forever, make a cast iron wok. And it's gigantic, and it's very heavy.
It's very heavy.
But I thought, well, let me give that a try. It was not a terribly expensive thing. Great big thing. And so I have been cooking with my cast iron wok, and I love this thing. This is fabulous. I would not trade it now for anything else. I really like it. It took a little bit of time to get friendly with it, and then I also had to order. I bought a genuine wok spatula a great big one to use with it, and it's been really good. And now it makes me think about the fact that my good wife, for my birthday last year, gave me a cast iron skillet, which I still haven't used. Another Lodge, a great big, very heavy skillet, and I keep thinking, you know, that's sitting there, and I should get to using that. So maybe this year I need to get that cranked up. But the cast iron wok, this is a good thing. It rings like a bell when you're cooking
Yes.
And the other thing here, I know I'm blathering on, but one of the things that I've done with this that was also something that I had resolved to do. And it's not like it's a big, fancy, or complicated thing, but we have been doing stir-fry tofu.
Oh, yes.
We have been making my version of mapo tofu.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
And it is really good.
Yes.
And it's, you know, again, I kind of hunted around, looked at different recipes to see, you know, what I might like to do with it. And mostly I'm doing a recipe that I got from Martin Yan,
uh-huh,
which I have tweaked just a tiny bit. it is really good. And I don't, again, it was one of these things where, you know, the first time I made it, we ate it and thought this is really good. And we said, now, why did we wait this long? This is not like exotic, really. You know, you can go in the grocery store and buy tofu. Have been able to for a long time.
Oh, yes.
And it's just a simple kind of homey comfort dish that's really, really good.
That's so, a very great favorite of mine.
Tofu and my cast iron wok, and
the
it's
old,
really good.
The old pocked face grandmother is what mapa tofu is called.
That's what the really.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know it's one of those things about if you're Chinese and you're from the right part of China, your mom, it's something that your mom makes at home. But everybody's mom probably makes it a little bit different.
A little bit different. That's it. And it's really neat. Oh, that's good. I'm curious about how with a cast iron and if you're going to stir fry, you want it really hot.
Yes.
Can you get it really hot?
Oh, yes. Yes, you know, the thing about that I guess I learned about cast iron is, first of all, you need to warm it slowly.
Yes.
But so that does, you know, maybe it's not real energy efficient, but, you know, I probably take 10, 15 minutes to heat the pan.
Oh, okay.
So that by the time I'm ready to go, yeah,
no,
it's hot.
I do it in 5 seconds. That's me. See, I want it in 5 seconds.
Well, the thing about probably if you have a conventional sort of a steel wok,
yeah,
you can get it ready to go in 2 minutes.
But
this does take time to heat the pan.
But it would stay hot for a long time.
Yeah. So that, and also that way, you know, the food then after you've cooked it, it will definitely stay warm. It doesn't really overcook it, but it does because the bowl of the pan really stays hot, so that it does. So if you, you know, have a couple of servings, it will keep it warm.
Then when you wash it out, you never wash it with soap.
No
soap. No. Water only. Yep. In fact, you can get a nice little scrub brush.
Well, I have one of those bamboo
bamboo
deals that are like a scrub brush that I've
yes.
been using to cook it. And yes, just what hot water,
yep.
scrape the stuff out of there, and then I put it back on the stove.
Let it heat
it up, warm it up yep. again, put a little oil in there, rub the oil in there, you're done.
You're ready for the next one. That's
and,
great.
I think it does better every time I use it. Yes, it's beautiful, but it is really heavy. I'll tell you that. It's very, very heavy. You could not pick it up. Well, maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger could, but I cannot pick it up with one.
Plus,
it doesn't have the one thing that would be nice is if it had the kind of handle, you know, the fry pan handle that
some walks
have. It just has the little rings.
Oh, two little rings.
And there's no way you're picking that up with one hand because
it's just too heavy. No, you can't.
Because it's too heavy.
Well, that's great.
But it was quite the deal, and I was not a little unsure about it because my experience with cast iron is kind of limited. But I'm very, very pleased with it.
That's good.
It's great. And mapo tofu, that's a good thing.
Oh, that really is a good dish. You betcha. Mm. Well, thanks for calling in.
Well,
David.
Thank you very much. Now that I've filled, how many hours have I filled?
Oh, no. We got folks
we
to
got
talk
other,
to.
Yet. We got folks to talk with. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Champagne is up next. Line one. Hello. Hi.
I have a little variation of the Jewish, of the butter cake.
Yes.
Cook, and it is a Jewish butter cake. And the difference with you is you take two cups of flour.
Yes.
Two sticks of butter.
Yes.
A cup of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even do the eggs, so probably a little salt, but I don't do that either. But you put in... And what I buy, wet ginger. Ginger you can buy in jars, and it is wet.
Oh, it's ground. It's already ground up, isn't it?
The
ginger?
The ginger is in little cubes. You can buy it in pots. It is very hard to get here. I get it from Holland or from Australia.
I see.
And it is in their own water, in their own juice.
Oh, I see.
And... because of that he put that in the cake, in the dough. But because of that sugar, you don't use so much sugar.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And the Dutch don't use much sugar. What I do, I just knead it together with my hands, no beater.
Oh, no beater, yes, all right.
Nothing. Put it in a pie pan, like 1 inch deep.
Yes.
And 8 diameter. And then you bake that for 30 minutes at 350.
Right.
And over the top, I do water, just a little water.
Oh, water, uh-huh.
Put that down, rinse that off or something. That makes a nice crust. Over the cake, I put diagonal with just a knife, squares on it.
Yes.
And then you cook it and you bake it at 350 Fahrenheit. And it should be soft in the inside and hard.
And hard on the outside.
Outside.
Yes.
Now, the same kind of butter cook, you can make nicer even. Same thing, but the filling is almond paste.
Oh, so almond paste, yes.
So you divide your dough into halves. Inside, on the other half, you put the almond paste.
Uh-huh.
What you make with almonds and sugar and some lemon peel, and make you put it inside, and you have a wonderful dessert.
Oh, that's neat. Oh, that
yeah.
I like that. It's kind of like a marzipan, isn't it?
That is marzipan. You put marzipan in it. It's called in Dutch gevulde koek, filled cake.
Oh, great.
The other one is Jewish butter cake. It's delicious.
Oh, I like that. This was new to me, and I was really thrilled.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear these variations. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Yes.
All right, thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right, and we'll go on to another call. Here, this is Champagne, and it is line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you were talking about your cast iron skillet that you haven't used yet.
Yes.
I highly recommend you do so.
Well, you have a particular use for it? You want to say?
Sure, yeah. One of my favorites, I started using cast iron actually as a way to kind of try and get the best of both worlds between nonstick and, you know, kind of steel cookware, because you can get the sear from that you can't get on a nonstick, you can get from cast iron, but if you season it properly and use it properly, you don't need very much, you know, fat or oil to cook with it, because you get a nice patina on there.
Mm-hmm.
But I use it for making frittatas, which my family just loves.
Oh, yes. You know,
for breakfast. And it's the perfect thing because it can handle so much heat to be able to move from the stovetop into a hot oven.
Into the oven, yes.
And there are so many variations. One of my favorites, I do a frittata with asparagus and a smoked Gruyere cheese.
Ooh.
And it's one of our favorites.
That sounds good. Well, I've thought just recently that yes, that particularly for recipes that involve searing something and then finishing it in the oven. And occasionally I've done things like that where I've seared it in one pan on top of the stove and then I've put it into something else in the oven. And the other day I thought, now Dave, you use your cast iron skillet, you can use the same, you can sear it and then you can take it and put it in the oven. There's no, you know, all you have to have is the one pan. And again, I thought, now why did it take me so long to
figure that one out?
So, yeah.
Well, and Lodge makes a great Dutch oven as well for that kind of thing, where you can, you know, put it on a hot stovetop. Uh-huh. Like if you're doing a piece of a braised meat, you know, put it on the stovetop, get that sear in, add your, you know, your liquid, your vegetables, whatever, cover it, and then stick it straight in the oven.
Yeah.
I'm a Dutch oven fan myself. I've got 3.
Yeah, I love them. I mean, I would love to have like a La Crusette, you know, but the Lodge does a great job.
Well, yeah, those are nice. And if you're making certain kinds of foods, which I have never found any acid that bothers the cast iron. I don't bother with the taste. I mean, I know that we've been using those for years and years and years and years, and I just give up on this bit about, oh, you can't use that because it isn't enameled on the inside. I just get out. I've got 2, a great, great big one and 2 small ones.
Yeah. Well, I got into doing this because I was started trying to cook much healthier. And
yes.
I was looking for ways to sear without having to use a lot of fat.
Mm-hmm.
And the cast iron is just great for that.
I do believe, now I may be wrong, this just comes to the top of my mind, but cast iron is healthy for you because it does somehow transfer some iron into your food, into your system.
Right. I have read that too.
Yeah. I don't know how it does it, but I don't know how it does it, but it says it does it, so I love it anyway.
Well, while I've got you, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
In trying to make these, you know, do healthier cooking, I don't want to give up anything, and so I've just tried to find ways to, like, lighten things. And when it comes to particularly, like, white sauces,
uh-huh.
I'm having a really hard time. So instead of using a heavy cream,
yeah.
I tried using not condensed, but
evaporated milk.
Evaporated skim milk.
Yes.
Right? Or non-fat buttermilk, but I find a lot of times that it breaks, and I don't get a good kind of smooth finish. Am I doing something wrong?
I don't know about the buttermilk, but I know that you can use condensed milk. I mean, evaporated milk, not condensed.
Right.
Evaporated milk is usable right away.
Okay.
I can't imagine why it's doing that.
I get like little white flecks in it.
No.
Okay. Maybe that's mostly the buttermilk.
My guess is that buttermilk would be a culprit there, because evaporated milk is used in a lot of cooking,
right?
And I've never had any real problems with it. Mother used to use that a lot. In fact, I grew up making my own at the age of five, I guess. I started making my own cocoa in the morning with evaporated milk.
That would be nice and creamy.
Well, it was nice and creamy. Well, you mix it with water.
Okay.
We did, anyway. That was depression days. But evaporated milk is a good product.
Right.
I'm finding more and more uses for it. I really am. The information is coming around a lot. So I'd stick with the evaporated milk.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. And thanks for the encouragement there on this cast iron skillet. I'm gonna finally pull it out. You know, it's underneath the stove. There's that thing that holds all the pans where I hide my sins. And it's down there, so I'm going to pull it out.
Oh, I love it. I use it more than any other sauté pan I have right now.
All right, great. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Mine's on the top of the stove right now.
All right.
My cast iron.
I'd have to get mine out.
I even gave one away. I had too many. I gave one away last year.
Madison, Wisconsin, line number 4, our toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, who can this be from Madison?
Yeah. Well, this is a recipe new to us for
uh-huh.
squash, which is very easy and really tasty and would go well any time with ham or perhaps with holiday poultry or whatever.
Ooh.
Very easy, and learned from Wisconsin television from Jacques and his daughter.
Oh, yes.
Goes like this. It's for squash. And the squash that was used is the pale orange one that is about the size of a softball on one end and looks like a roll of sausage on the other.
Butternut.
Right. And you peel it and dice it into about 1-inch chunks. Melt about a half a stick of butter in a no-stick pan. That's going to be important. Put the squash in the pan. Add some salt and pepper. 2 cups of apple juice or apple cider.
Apple
and
juice.
About 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar. The whole thing simmers covered for about 10 minutes until the squash becomes soft. Oh, I forgot. About a tablespoon also of sugar. The whole thing simmers covered for about 10 minutes, and then you remove the cover and allow the apple juice to get absorbed
uh-huh.
into the squash. And then in the last 5 minutes of cooking or so, the whole thing will begin to caramelize. And so you toss it a little bit in your pan, and it's caramelized, and then it goes right onto the plate. It's a new way of doing squash, and it's really wonderful and really quite simple to do. The no-stick pan is essential because as the sugar from the juice and the little bit that you have added caramelized, the whole thing gets a little bit sticky.
Oh, it would, yeah. That really sounds kind of neat. That's a much faster way than poking it in the oven and letting it cook forever.
Exactly, and it's a variation. It's different from any squash that at least we have ever had.
Well, I think doing that with a butternut squash is kind of interesting, because I find butternut squash, they're using it in everything, and I find it a little bit dull and not very interesting. But if it's going to be caramelized and with vinegar and apple juice, as a little boost of taste on the side, that sounds really neat.
You would like it very much.
Good. Thanks
sure.
a lot.
And it's easy.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you
Bye-bye.
For the call. All right, then. Let's see. Back here. We've got about 5-6 minutes left. Back here for caller in Sullivan. Line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sounds like Kessner and Phillips are making a comeback like Grits. My call is about cast iron as well.
Yes.
So the season's cooked like it sounds like you and your callers are. I bought a cast iron skillet with every intention of using it and thought it'd be great for cooking out on the patio on the open fire pit and made the mistake, I think, of spraying it with Pam and plunking it down and trying to cook pancakes on it. And I think I've ruined it. I was just wondering if you could, for your less experienced listeners, tell us how you start out with cast iron. And I know that some have said you have to season it, and you talked about
yes.
having it using hot water and then putting a little oil on it, setting it back on the stove. I'm wondering, do you set it back on a warm burner with the oil in it? Or I'll just let you talk about how you start out with a cast iron and keep it in good condition.
I would use oil, and I would put, less than a quarter of an inch of oil, I mean, a goodly amount of oil, and then put it on. You could put it in the top of the stove or in the oven, but you do heat it up until, well, as what it is pretend cooking for the first time. You're not cooking anything, but I know this sounds crazy, and I didn't want to believe it, but it's true. The iron itself expands and accepts oil into the iron and then encloses it back up when it's cooled. And so that's what seasoning does, because what you end up with then is a constantly sort of semi-oiled pan. So that's why you don't want to wash it out with soap and water, because then that dissolves all the oil, gets it out completely, and you have to re-season it. But seasoning could be done, I suppose it could be done as simple as taking some bacon and frying it carefully. You know, I would think that the first time doing bacon would certainly season your pan. But generally it's done with oil and on top of the stove or in the oven for a period of time. And then when you pour the oil off, you take salt and you simply sprinkle a goodly amount of salt in it and use a paper towel to wipe it out. So the thing is sort of cleaned with the scouring of the salt, and also the salt doesn't bother it any, but you don't, and you can use water, but only use water and no soap. And you have to do that 2 or 3 times in a lifetime. I mean, somebody's going to come over and wash it out with soap and water. And that always makes me grumbly. But it will build up then and make a, and it makes, I don't know what that is called. One of the persons called it a patina, which is accurate, but there's another word for that film that it creates. But that you want to do that because it keeps things working better, and things won't stick if the pan is seasoned. So it's pretty easy to do.
And I think you have to, even if you buy, for example, I think the Lodge people, and I have no interest in the Lodge company, the Lodge people say that their cookware is pre-seasoned and it's ready to go when you get it. Now, I think that that's true, and yet at the same time, it still requires some cooking in it, because you have to do this process of building up the oil. The pores in the pan expand and the oil soaks into the pan. And
yeah.
And it really takes some cooking before it's really going to be ready to go. I think if you get it pre-seasoned, it doesn't take as long. But even if it says it's – my feeling is even if it says it's pre-seasoned, you still have to
go
cook in
and
it. And
you
have to do it over a period of time. But and I would think, though, that the pan should come with some instructions as to how exactly to do that. When you got it, what was it, black or was it sort of silvery gray?
Black.
Well, that still doesn't necessarily mean it was pre-seasoned. So did it come with something that said what to do?
Well, you know, as with most things, I probably threw the instructions out.
who made it? Who made the pan?
You know, I don't even know that right now. I got it early last year and don't recall.
Well, if you could figure out who made the pan, you also could, and if you have internet, you could go to there. Like I'm sure if it was a Lodge pan, you could go to lodge.com and it would have instructions on how to season and how to care for the pan.
Okay.
And maybe if it's not one of their skillets, that you could still go to lodge.com and
Wagner. Could it be a
and,
Wagner?
So it's not
it's not hard, but it takes a little time and a little patience. And I'm sure that people who use a cast iron cookware a lot would say your patience will eventually be rewarded, and you'll be really happy.
But I shouldn't have used Pam, and it shouldn't be sticky.
It shouldn't be sticky, no. But you could Pam is all right, but you want to season it first. It seems to me like you got kind of a mess that it wasn't seasoned right, because you can use Pam.
Yeah, so plain old vegetable oil, though, is just, you know, should work just fine. You just pour a little bit in there and just have a paper towel and just wipe it around. And if the pan's hot, it'll soak it up.
Somehow it soaks it up. I don't know how.
Hey,
well, good luck with that. Let us know how it works out for you.
Okay, sure. Enjoy the show. Thanks.
Let's try one more. Edgar County, line two. Hello.
Okay. As to wind up the program, I have three things. Have you ever tried okra in your grits?
No, I haven't.
It's great.
Well, no,
it's great. It gives you vegetables.
Yes, it does. So you would make the grits, and would you cook the okra separate and mix them?
No, I'd mix it in and cook it with it.
And cook it with it.
Yeah.
Could we use frozen okra?
Yep.
Okay.
That's what I use.
And you don't have to put any cornmeal with it and let the slimy stuff happen. What's going to happen,
Just happen. Also, you can get ginger that she was talking about at World Harvest.
No, I don't know about that ginger.
It's called natural pickled sushi ginger.
Oh, I know natural pickled sushi ginger.
Gingerpeople.com if you're interested.
I know that from Japanese cooking. Okay, of course. And I couldn't understand what that was. Oh, good.
And also Griswold is my skillet.
Griswold.
Yes, that's my mother received one as a wedding gift some years ago.
Yes.
And I also have my grandmother's, and I even have a Dutch oven. It was my great-grandmother's.
Well, you know.
Cast iron.
That's the great thing about it, is it just lasts forever.
And your kids will get it, too, because it'll last forever.
That's it.
That's it. I like that.
You have to make sure that if you ever have any help, you teach them how to properly take care of it.
That's what I said. don't let them touch it.
And also, if you want to finish off your okra in the last few minutes, break an egg on top of it.
Oh, my. Oh, that sounds like a brunch ready-made.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks.
All righty.
Well, we're going to have to go. I'm sorry we got one more call that we can't take. We're just here at the end. But the promise is that next month, first Wednesday, whenever that is, the man will be back. We'll talk about something else. We don't know
Valentine's Day.
Oh, cooking for lovers.
Food for lovers.
Doyle Moore, he's the man we call our chef in residence. He's been stopping by here for a long time, first Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock hour. We always talk about food and cooking and have a great time. Thanks to all the folks who called in. Thank you.
I'll pack up my grits bag and be gone.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.